In Genesis chapter 48, verse 15, "And he," that is Jacob, "blessed Joseph, and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac. Let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." In Jacob's family, Joseph was kind of like a swan that got stuck in a duck's nest. He was a child that thought like an old man. He was mature in his thinking, and he thought clearly. His brothers hated him, and because they hated him, they sold him into slavery, sent him to, as far as they knew, unknown trials down in Egypt. But in this text, we find Jacob speaking to Joseph after their reunion. The old man is soon to die. It always amuses me that God never tells people when they're going to die until he prepares them to die. I've been around some folks that knew they were going to die, and they're believers, and it's interesting to be around them. God gives them an insight that most people don't have. In these verses, he prays for Joseph's two young sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. In the same way, we as human beings come to our older years, let me put it that way, with a prayer in our hearts that is based on a lifetime of experience. I know more about praying tonight than I ever have known. I've prayed since I've known God. But I think I maybe pray more effectively now than I ever have. Tonight I want, if the Lord will help me, I want to bring you a message that I have titled it, for lack of a better title, A Historical Prayer. And there's four or five things that I want to show you here in these two verses. First of all, in these verses we see Jacob as a father and a comforter. Jacob blessed Joseph by blessing his children. One of the things that I don't like about the generation that you and I live in is it's full of older people who are so busy blessing themselves that they have no time to really bless anybody else. Jacob knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to die soon. And he takes time out before he blesses his other sons to bless Joseph through his children. You know, parents ought to strive to bring their children into a divine inheritance. Most of us have all got children, and we've all had hopes and best wishes for them. If we're not careful, we get so caught up in wishing them the best in this world, that they'll have good jobs and good education and nice homes and good cars and do well in this world, that we forget what's important. We must be careful where and with whom we convey our relations. I want my family to know Christ. I really don't care if they don't have two nickels to rub together, and if all they got to eat is a slice of bread and a cup of water. If they know Christ, they know God through Him, they'll be blessed. These two Egyptian children, Ephraim and Manasseh, are pictured with God as an example. Their grandfather sets before them an example. He says, God is your guide. God is your direction. God is your example. And your personal testimony to God's goodness and mine is all we really need to bless them. Now, I've watched people all my life. And I've watched them make an absolute fool out of themselves, trying to make sure they leave enough toys for their children and their grandchildren so they can have a great big fight over them. I'll tell you what you need to bless your children and your grandchildren with. You need to tell them how good God's been to you. Children are interested in their parents. And they're interested in their grandparents, especially in their history. Those of you who have grandchildren, you have a greater opportunity to speak to them of God than you had to speak to your own children. First of all, you've learned a whole lot. You've learned something. We can speak to our children, but we can speak better, I think, to grandchildren sometimes. They're interested in your history. They don't understand your life. I don't think we do. The world has changed so much in my lifetime and in your lifetime that I don't know if I understand it all, much less my children. I remember, I think back when I was a child, there was one water pipe on the whole street. Half the houses in town didn't have electricity. And more than half of them had an outhouse out back. You tell that to most children today, they say, you're kidding me. But Jacob introduced his grandchildren to God in order to bless them. He knew that the best way he could bless his grandchildren, he was an old man, he was going to die. Their daddy had plenty of money. And they didn't need his money. His name didn't mean anything to them. His family didn't really mean anything, but he wanted them to know about his God. Our message of God has to be effective, it has to be from a spiritual perception. The problem with most people's religion in this day in which you and I live is that it has a physical perception. God is something that you touch and you feel related to the things of this world. That's all he is to most people. When physical facilities fail you, when your eyes get weak, when your bones get dry, when your blood pressure doesn't work right, when they fail you, speak of God. Speak of God. You know, it's good to prepare our children for their earthly life. I'm not saying we shouldn't teach them. We ought to teach them. And we ought to guide them the best that we can. We ought to educate them the best that we can. We ought to prepare them for life the best that we can. But I'll tell you what, it's a far better thing to prepare our children and our grandchildren for eternal life than it is for earthly life. The older I get, the more I see that. Jacob also speaks here of ancestral mercies. He says, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk. These were men, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, who recognized and worshiped God in their hearts. I tell you, most modern people, most people in the world you live in today, they don't recognize God with their heart. They recognize God with their head, They recognize God with their emotion. They recognize God with feelings. They recognize God with involvements. But the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob was a God who was recognized and worshipped in the heart. In the heart. These men acknowledge God as an integral part of their life. Abraham believed God, it said, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. Isaac's one of my more favorite people in the Bible. The Bible doesn't tell us a lot about Isaac. Doesn't tell us a whole lot about him. He's not mentioned too often much. More written about his old days when he was nearly blind than there was about his life. But he was a man that walked with God. He was God in their daily experiences, and he was God in their relationships with other people. They had other relatives that were not so godly. And they dealt with the world in a different way than Abraham and Isaac and Jacob did. If we walk with God, our lives ought to be happy. And they ought to be noble. There's a man that's dead now. I've been dead for a few years. I knew him most of my life. And when I was a young man, didn't know any different. And in the years when I was an atheist, that fella always perplexed me. He just perplexed me. He was a simple man. He didn't have a lot of this world's goods. As far as I know, he never knew how to drive a car. Walked everywhere with him. But when you talk to him, he talked with an attitude about God that very few people that I deal with today know anything about. These men walked before God in obedience to his commands. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. God came to Abraham when he was 100 years old, said, "You're going to have a new baby next year." Sarah laughed. Abraham learned not to. They heard God's call, and they followed his bidding. God came to Abraham one day when Isaac was a young boy, teenager. He said, "Take your son on that mountain and offer him to me." He took him. He told his servants, said, "Stay right here. Me and the boy will be back." But he took him to sacrifice him. These men trusted God completely in their lives. Abraham and Isaac conversed with heaven even while they walked on this earth. They enjoyed the favor of God while they walked with him. I've been working on a message today, aiming to preach Sunday if the Lord let me, and it just dawned on me as I've studied over and over again, most people I know of just don't enjoy the favor of God. They think they know him. They say they know him. Abraham and Isaac enjoyed his favor. There's a charm about that, which was prized by these men, and it was prized by our forefathers. It's only in modern times, in the last 50 years, that the churches have turned into a social club. And people have stopped caring about God, and they just care about themselves. They dwelt in a relationship with God regardless of their circumstances. Abraham was up and down like a yo-yo until he was an old man. But he walked with God. Isaac had his highs and lows, but he walked with God. Jacob, he was in the valley more than he was on the mountaintop, but he walked with God. And Joseph has done the same thing. You know, a godly ancestry casts a responsibility on young people. The sons of Joseph were being given here a heritage of life. Their granddaddy was speaking to them in a way to make them understand that they were called to a certain way of life, to believe in God and trust in God. A godly ancestor will invest your case with great hopefulness. I think about my family, my relatives, what few there are left. There ain't a thing about any of them that endears me one bit. They're going to all lay down and die. And we're going to put them in a hole in the ground just like they're going to do me. And if all they have is what I see in this world, they don't have much. There's a few, very few, who have this hopefulness. If God blessed your ancestors, He may bless you. I know, all of you to some degree. The person that comes to my mind right now is Brenda and Shirley's mother. She laid down a great heritage for you all. That woman was a believer. She didn't just talk about religion. She knew God. She knew God. If God blessed them, He might bless us. The third thing that I see here is that Jacob stops for a moment and he tells us of his personal mercy. He says here, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day. That word fed there is an interesting word. It is used most of the time in the Old Testament to speak of shepherds. And it can be just as accurately translated here as the God which shepherded me all my life long unto this day. I'm always intrigued with how much the Bible talks about sheep. I was reading today the 10th chapter of John. The Lord said, my sheep hear my voice. They know me. And they follow me. Jacob here speaks of God as his shepherd. Now Jacob would be the first one to tell you. I'm not telling stories on him. Jacob had failed miserably in shepherding his own life. Jacob kind of reminds me a little bit like Peter. He always thinks he's in charge, but he wasn't most of the time. Until he gave up and God took hold of him. The saints of God delight in the shepherding of God. He has been with me all these days since first he revealed himself to me. And he has taken his rod and his staff and has comforted me repeatedly through the last 40 years or so. You know these words better than I do, probably. But they're worth reading every once in a while if you haven't. The Lord is my shepherd. And because he's my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. I love this verse. Surely, surely, Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know, the Lord's shepherding has always been perfect. He said he took care of me all my life. He fed me all my life unto this day. We struggle in this world sometimes. It's a matter of subsistence. But our struggles for subsistence have a beauty about them that comes to us not from this world's perspective, but from the perspective of our God. He didn't say He'd give you plenty. He said He'd give you enough. He blesses us with far more than enough. Jacob had once had absolutely nothing. He left the house of Isaac with nothing. He stood out there on that hillside and had that dream about that ladder, and he didn't have anything. He had his coat on his back and a stick in his hand and a piece or two of bread in his bag, and that's all he had. But now he has a great deal. God's blessed him richly. And God has fed him in both those situations. When he was out there on that mountain at Bethel, and he didn't have anything to eat, God fed him. And now he's here in Egypt, in the land of Goshen, under the guidance and the direction and the provision of his son, who is the vice president, if you will, of Egypt, and he's got plenty. And God did both of them. God did both of them. God was with him when he started with nothing but his hands. You know, mercy is sweet when it comes from the hand of God. Sometimes people give you things. They're being merciful and you don't know whether it's really legitimate or not. But when God gives us something, it's always sweet. But Jacob had not only been fed, he'd been led. You know, sheep, especially in that part of the world, sheep have to be guided constantly by the efforts of the shepherd. You leave sheep alone, you don't pay attention to them, they'll wander like blind ducks in a pond. The shepherd had to guide them. He had to guide them to pasture. He had to guide them to water. He had to guide them to a safe place to sleep. God is just as needed in prosperity as He's needed in adversity. You know, the sheep need the shepherd. When out there in the desert lands, in the lands of just sand and rocks and hot winds and heat, the hardships, the adversity, the dangers, they need the shepherd's hand. But I'll tell you something. They need Him just as much when He leads them to a place where the grass is up to their belly, sweet as sugar, and the water's as cool and still as a fountain, and there's nothing around to bother them. And one of my problems with this generation of people we live in is that so many folks, when they have plenty, they forget, first of all, that God gave it to them. And secondly, they forget that they depend on God. They think they can take care of things by themselves. I asked a fellow one time. Well, this fellow made this statement to me. He said, I can't, if I get to heaven, I'll get there by the skin of my teeth. And I said to him, you won't get there. He got kind of angry at me. He said, what do you mean I won't get there? I said, you're not going to get to heaven anyway except by the grace of God. What you do's got not a thing to do with it. Kind of upset the fellow a little bit, but that's okay. He'll get over it. I hope God will get him over it. If he doesn't, he won't get over it. And then Jacob, with some assurance, goes on to speak of God's redeeming mercy. He says, He redeemed me. He redeemed me. In the 16th verse. The angel which redeemed me from all evil. You notice that the word angel is capitalized there. This is the Lord he's talking about. He redeemed me from all evil. He relates to this angel, this shepherd, as his kinsman with God. I was reading the book of Ruth the other day. I like to read the book of Ruth. You know, that old kinsman redeemer. She came home and her mother-in-law said, "Well, she's kin to us. He's kin to us. He's kin to us. He's our kinsman. Oh, bless her heart. When Jacob experienced his heaviest trials in life, this angel had always interposed. The angel had managed his anger. Remember, Jacob used to lose his temper and get mad. He managed his abuse. He was deceptive in troubled times. This angel had managed him in decades of frustration and decades of anxiety when his father-in-law cheated him and his sons cheated him. And as he got older, they were more and more out of line. He still trusted this angel. He redeems his sheep with blood from the death of sin. He redeemed us in death on his tree and from our death in sin. He confirmed